John Harris is going to join us a few moments from now. We had a spot, if you missed it, it was really good. Jean-Jacques Taylor from 103.3 ESPN in Dallas joined us and gave some interesting thoughts on Dez Bryant. More on that in a moment. Get breaking news first. Join us on Twitter at Sports Radio 610. Also, 20% of you are driving cars that have an HD radio. If you are one of them, you need to listen to us on 100.3 HD2. It's crystal clear Sports Radio 610 that blasts all across Houston on 100.3 HD2. I got a new car 2 years ago, and I listen exclusively on 100.3 HD2.
Oh, yeah?
I do, yes. The audio sound is fantastic.
A lot of people don't even realize I have HD.
Yeah, it was it was kind of worrisome for me because I had to go and, like, look for it, the sub-channel. Like, if I didn't know I had it, then it would have been tricky to find.
Why don't they make it easier?
That's a good question. That's for higher-ups. Yes, make it easier. Let's go to our friend John Harris on the Buyers Barricades Hotline. John, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
John, we're doing well. What do you think about... I am not a fan of bringing in Dez Bryant. I think Seth is also probably not a fan of bringing Dez Bryant to the Texans. What do you think?
Well, I think when you look at the dead cap money... the dead money the Cowboys are going to have to experience on their cap this year, and just outright cutting him and not even offering a pay cut, I think that probably should tell you a little bit of something for a team to have, 8 years of equity built up in Dez Bryant to be able to say, look, Dez, see ya. I mean, that should be a sign right there to tell you everything. Now, look, I know there are probably a lot of people over the weekend at some point said, well, hey, man, if I plug Dez Bryant into Madden and I play Madden and I got Will and I got DeAndre and I got Dez, man, on Madden, that looks awesome. Why can't that happen in real life? Look, there are a lot of things in real life that obviously are not going to fly in Madden and vice versa, and I think this is one of them because, to me, the dynamic of Dez in the locker room, how he is with the coaching staff, I don't know how comfortable I would feel about putting him into that environment. Look, the Texans receivers are not a bunch of divas that are, you know, crying for the football. You know, hey, throw me the ball. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins is the least diva of them all from that perspective. He is never going to come back to the huddle and go, hey, Deshaun, throw me the ball, throw me the ball. But now all of a sudden you throw a guy like Dez in there that says, throw me the ball, give me the ball, and is loud and boisterous about it. I just think that can make a lot of people uncomfortable. Not just coaches, but players as well. Deshaun, does that make him uncomfortable? I don't know if anything makes him uncomfortable, but I would feel very skittish about bringing him in. Now, he's also going to work with a route coach, which begs the question, for 8 years, what was he doing? What? He wasn't working on his routes for 8 years? I mean, I know he's one of the most physically talented players we've ever seen at that position, but to not be working at your craft for 8 years in the way that he was supposed to, it floors me. So to me, look, you still got some money under the cap. You got to get Clowney extended. You probably got to work on a BMAC extension as well. So, and you also got to, I think, provide for a rainy day if something does happen to one of your key players down the road. To me, I think adding Dez, I think they should add a wide receiver at some point in this draft. I don't think in the third round, but I think it's a pretty deep wide receiver class. I just don't know that Dez ends up being the right fit for this team on a number of different levels. Athletically gifted, yeah. But I don't know if I trust him with this team and what's going to happen if he's not getting the ball early on. I just don't know that I buy into him being a good fit for this squad.
John, the Oklahoma State left tackle Orlando Brown is a guy that some people had slotted as a first rounder until he had a disastrous combine performance and a slightly better personal workout at Oklahoma. I've kind of talked myself into Orlando Brown after watching him on film these last few weeks as a third rounder, potentially late second rounder. Where did you have Orlando Brown originally, and what would you feel about the Texans taking him now?
Well, it's funny, when I first watched him on tape, I texted a buddy of ours, and I said, if he's in your top 40, I'm going to fire you. And he kind of joked and laughed and said, I'm telling you, he's going to be in the first round. And then the combine a few weeks later, and it was kind of the other way. After you watch Orlando, the one thing you realize is he's a pretty cerebral guy for a left tackle. For a young guy that hasn't played really a lot of football, which is a little bit shocking, but he hasn't played a lot of football, he's pretty cerebral in the way that he approaches pass rushing and how he should defend pass rushers and what to look for from pass rushers. I thought that was pretty unique for a guy that young to have such a mindset. So to me, that gives him a little bit of a leg up. But, you know, when you pass rush against him, It takes you a year and a half to get around him.
Right.
I mean, he's that big. He's that long. And so I watched all of his reps against Nick Bosa. And Nick is essentially almost a 100% facsimile of Joey. And I think Joey's a stud. And I think Nick is going to be even more so. I mean, this guy's a baller. Bosa would try and speed rush around him, and he just couldn't get there. And even the times when Bosa did have the speed and it looked like he could turn the corner and dip that shoulder, it took him so long because Orlando would just stick those arms out. Even though it looked like Brown was beat, they allowed Baker to step up in the pocket and make a throw. So, to me, I don't think Orlando's going to be there at the top of the third round. I don't. I think teams are going to look at this tackle draft and go, okay, McGlinchey's going to get overdrafted. Connor Williams will probably get overdrafted. I think Colton Miller will get overdrafted. And I think Orlando Brown probably fits at the top of the third round. But I think in that second round, the teams that missed out on those three or four other tackles are going to say, look, we can deal with this. We probably will play him at right tackle, and maybe that's where he exists for his career. But I think he can play, and I think he's going to be a good tackle going forward. I do think he has to cut a little bit more weight. I think he's probably better served to be around 330 than he is 340. But keep in mind, he ended up at Oklahoma, I think, at 400, and has continued to lose weight and get himself in shape. If he does that, I think he's going to end up being a pretty good right tackle for somebody down the road.
John Harris joining us on the Buyers Barricades Hotline. John, I want to do this. One follow-up on Orlando Brown. I want to play audio. So Tony Pauline joined In the Loop on Friday. Here's what I want to do. I want to play Tony's take on Orlando Brown, and then coming out, I want your reaction to what Tony said. We'll start with Tony Pauline on Orlando Brown Friday on In the Loop.
Teammate potentially, Mark Andrews of Oklahoma,
mm-hmm.
a guy who's very productive on the field, ran well at the combine, catches the ball well, not much of a blocker primarily because they didn't ask him to block. But I think that would be a major steal for the Texans if he's there in the third round. They snatch him up. Definitely their type of tight end.
Okay, I screwed that up. That was Mark Andrews. What do you think of Mark Andrews and what Tony had to say about him?
I agree with him. I like Mark Andrews in the third round. I probably would be a little skittish. And he made a point there at the end about Oklahoma didn't ask him to block. And keep in mind, when he was in high school, he was more of a wide receiver threat. When he got to Oklahoma, I remember as a freshman watching going, hey, what is this guy? And that's not a bad thing now in the NFL because we got a lot of those guys. In fact, the Texans have got a lot of those guys. You know, what is Jadeveon Clowney? I mean, how many times have you asked that question? So what is Mark Andrews? Is he a tight end? Is he a big wide receiver? Like, what is he? Well, I don't think it matters, to be honest with you. I think what he ends up being is a matchup nightmare in the passing game because you can line him up attached. You can line him up unattached. You can line him up in a 3-by-1 set. He can be the one on the opposite side. And, you know, like the Patriots would do with Gronk. The Patriots will take Gronk and put him out wide and say, all right, how are you going to cover him? And a lot of teams are going to end up putting a safety on him. And Mark Andrews would go up over a safety and take one away from him. I think Mark Andrews would be a really nice fit for this team, considering they just brought in or claimed out waivers Matt Lengel. I think at 260 is a pretty good run blocker and kind of fits that role. I think at tight end, they could go really anything. I've said all along that I thought they needed a run-blocking tight end. The more I thought about it, and the more I thought about Bill O'Brien talking about a change in the offense, the more I realized, you know what, maybe they're not going to run as many inline wide sets as they have in the past. Maybe they're not going to use an inline wide tight end as much. Maybe they're going to just create matchups using Ryan Griffin and Steven Anderson, or Ryan Griffin and the rookie they bring in, or Steven Anderson and a rookie they bring in. Maybe they're not going to run as much of the old running game that they used to. Maybe they're just going to spread teams out with 11 personnel or even 10 personnel, and they're not going to use the tight end as much as they have. So I don't know, but I think Mark Andrews, from that perspective, would end up being a pretty good fit. Now, can he block? Having been a receiver mostly in high school and having been more of a wide receiver than a tight end at Oklahoma, that essentially is going to be his thing. But then again, a guy like Owen Daniels, Owen Daniels came out of Wisconsin as a former quarterback, but they forced him to block a little bit. He wasn't a great blocker when he got here, but he got better and better each and every year. I wouldn't say Owen Daniels was C.J. Fedorowicz or Rob Gronkowski as an inline blocker, but he got better and better each year. I think a guy like Andrews is athletic enough and big enough and strong enough that I think he could eventually learn to do that. I think Andrews would be a nice pick for the Texans in the third round.
John, when I try to read everything about Josh Rosen these days, and you wade into that whole mess of all the reported things that scouts have supposedly asked him or what they've said about him, I wonder, have you gotten a sense for whether scouts are actually even at criticizing his personality, or is that these are a few things that have leaked out and then we in the media are having a heyday talking about whether or not they're valid criticisms? Do you know what I'm asking there?
Yeah, I think so. I think here's one thing about Rosen. I think it was very public a few years ago when he was at Elite 11, how Trent Dilfer felt about him. And that reality show was him going into his senior year in high school. But Trent Dilfer painted a picture of Josh Rosen that was not rosy. It was, he's the smartest guy in the room, and he knows it. And he lets you know it. And I think when you see Jim, you take that and you take what Jim Mora had to say about him and you just put two and two together, I think smart people in sports media go, well, wait a second. That confirms what Trent Dilfer said, so it must all be true. So I think that's a tough nut to overcome. That's a tough hill to overcome for Josh Rosen, if you will. That said, here's the one thing I think people miss about Josh Rosen. Because they're saying, wow, he doesn't like football. He doesn't like – no, I think Josh Rosen loves to compete. I think that's the one thing people miss. He was getting the absolute bejesus knocked out of him in that A&M game. I mean, they're knocking him left and right, up and down. They're down 44 to 10 or whatever it was. And he's still getting the crap knocked out of him in that second half, but yet he's bringing UCLA back. And then they end up getting the win. Now, I don't think Rosen's perfect. I do think the key for Rosen – is ultimately, as it is for a lot of rookies, but I think even more so from a cerebral nature. You cannot have a quarterback's coach. You cannot have an offensive coordinator. You cannot have a head coach that he doesn't respect. If he doesn't respect their football acumen or their IQ, it's not going to go well. But I think if you have a cerebral coach, pretty smart, pretty innovative, understands, and can make adjustments on the fly, and can deal with that, I think Rosen will respect that coach and those coaches. And I think end up you'll get the most out of him. The one thing he absolutely is a competitor. But the one thing he also is he's going to challenge, as Jim Moore said, he's going to challenge those coaches. And if you don't respond to it, then he'll do his own thing. And that's going to be the detriment of him. But he's going to do his own thing because he always has felt he's the smartest guy in the room.
John, 10 days away from the draft. I will see you in 11 days for rounds 2 and 3. Thank you very much for joining us.
You got it, boy. Take care.
All right, there's John Harris via the Buyers Barricades Hotline. We have a quick version of the meltdown on a Monday morning on Sports Radio 610. Brad Peacock, Saturday, against the Texas Rangers. Can't happen. Up 5-2 in the eighth inning. He comes in, gives up a home run to Joey Gallo. Okay, that's fine. Gallo's a good player. He obviously has a ton of power. We know that. You know, he takes a pitch way inside and hits it to right field. That happens. I can live with that. But to allow a home run to, you know, Ronald Guzman or whoever it was in the eighth inning, that was, in my opinion, the worst specific performance from the Astros this weekend. Although I guess you could argue the overall offense against the Bartolo Colon. That's a game, to me, that they need to win. And I'm not really worried about the state of the team overall, but there have been enough games that I think that they ordinarily would have won last season. And two of them involved Brad Peacock. Last Wednesday against Minnesota, when Lance McCullers struggled, they came all the way back down, you know, 8-1, whatever it was. And then Brad Peacock, 3-2 in the ninth, gives up the game-winning home run to Kepler. And then Saturday, I mean, that was a win.
Yeah.
You're up 5-0. You're up 5-2, even with this closer situation that's murky. That's a game that you have to win. And Brad Peacock, respect him. He was an unsung hero of the World Series, Game 4, all that kind of stuff. Great job. That was a very poor job on Saturday because he cost them that win.
Right. Well, I mean, you don't have to win that specific game. But if you continually lose games like that over the course of the season, all of a sudden you're going to find yourself on the wrong side of the California Angels. That's right, California. That's the... I guess that's the big thing, is that you're just not seeing, you're not seeing the consistency out of this team that you saw for the vast majority of last year, except when there were clear, this is the difference. Last year, when they weren't looking good, there were clear explanations for it, and it usually centered around injuries.
Health.
You go back to the health of the starting pitchers. You go back to the health of Carlos Correa, George Springer, whomever it might be. You could always tie the lack of performance to injuries. This year, largely everybody's healthy. You got Gurriel, but you're healthier now than you were at the beginning of the season, and there's some things to be very uncomfortable about with that relief staff, and any would-be replacement for Ken Giles has slowly, one by one, fell by the wayside. One of the Davinsky's just too damn good about against lefties at this point to want to say that he's the full-time closer. I want him versus lefties. That's how it worked out yesterday when you bring him in. I don't know what to do other than just what hope and pray for what to happen with the relief staff. That Ken Giles just starts to look like he did over a several-month period last year.
And he's been a slow starter.
Right. Peacock's had a couple rough stretches, but I think largely, look, Brad Peacock has been proven enough that I'm not going to panic over him necessarily. But as you get closer and closer eventually to the trade deadline, man, it's getting appetizing to go out there and get some help. Is it going to be a shutdown closer? Probably not, but just some help of some sort.
But that would be, if they had one, you know, sort of significant weakness that you could see them addressing right now, if you called it on April 16th, the closer would certainly be the one.
I'm not worried about the bats one bit. Not one iota.
Yeah, I'm not really worried about the bats either. These guys are too young and too good.